Okay, everybody, I think we'll get started. We are going to discuss a whole host of kosher issues. Today, like we did on Monday night, it's going to be some introductory material, but the Tzurba material has volume 4, 5, and 6 on this topic. And I'm going to start with something in 6 that has to do with sakana. Things that we avoid eating because of sakana. Now, this goes down to the ultimate discussion in that you have in the Sefer HaChinuch of why kosher. What is kashrut? So, if you look at some of the very early narratives of the Tanakh, early part of Torah, you see that food plays an outsized role in some of the struggles we see in early humanity. If God feels that early man, Adam and Chava, have to be commanded, he could have commanded them to not climb that mountain or not touch that, not swim in that brecha or any one of 100 different possible losases. But the losase, obviously, we all know, takes the form of not eating something. Because, and think of the Hebrew word for bread, which is very close to the Hebrew word for war, because every act of eating on our part entails some kind of battle. Because we're not animals. Animals will eat whatever is in front of them until they overeat, right? They usually don't have enough food to satisfy them on the spot, and they have to keep hunting for more food until they get it and finish eating what's in front of them. Right? You all know a dog will just eat and eat and eat until it throws up, and then they'll eat what it just threw up. Like the pasuk in Mishlei, kelev hashav el ko. So we human beings have to know when to say no, and that's the Hasidic understanding of the pasuk that so well fits this inyan. Umosar ha'adam min ha'behema. Next word. Umosar ha'adam min ha'behema. It's in our daily davening. It's in Kohelet. Ayin. Right, so in the Pshat, it's a human being is no better than an animal. But the Hasidic word says, in what way is a human being better than an animal? Ayin, with an olive. A human being knows how to say no. Right? Alavai. Because I'll say that Adam and Chava were in the garden 1 hour before they ate from the tree. 1 hour. We are by nature rebellious. Our natural state is selfishness. What we have to do is to learn from forbearance, to learn. And I think like every parent has to figure out what's best for their own circumstance. But we were always mockbit 6 hours from the minute they could differentiate between milk and meat. Not when you're 1 and 2, you don't know the difference in milk and meat. When you're old enough to know this is ice cream and this is a frankfurter, we wait 6 hours in this house. And a child who's about to have a tantrum because I must have this ice cream, and you can use every logical argument in the world why you shouldn't be having ice cream now, right? None of it works, and they're going to keep with the tantrum until they get what they want. So if you're in public in a supermarket and they want this particular cereal that they saw on TV or in a friend's house, you can give all kinds of arguments why they shouldn't have it. But if you tell the first kid you can't have ice cream because you just had a frankfurter an hour ago and you're fleishigs, the kid, I trust me, if the kid knows that there's no hypocrisy in this house, that tantrum is over. And they're happily keeping this halacha because they know that's what it means to play on this team. This family is a team. You go to bat for each other. And to be on this team, you don't eat milk except fleishigs. You don't even need to know why. This is what we do. And the tantrum is over. The tantrum is over in the supermarket when they hear that Lucky Charms isn't kosher. You know, nothing unkosher goes into our house. No tantrum. A child at 2, 3 is already old enough to know what works and what doesn't work. So kashrus is the thing. And this is what precisely why eating disorders are so much worse than all other disorders. Gambling, addiction, drugs, arayos addictions, eating is the worst because eating we need every day. So what does the Torah do? It teaches us 100 things you have to do before you eat. So that life, like Socrates says, is very examined. And you're constantly thinking, what am I fleshix? Am I milchix? Is this kosher? Is this a good hashkacha? Did I tithe it? Did I give trumas? Did I give maisers? Is it shmita? Is it orla? Is it ravai? Is it kilayim? Is it, I can go on and on. Did I give payer from this food first? Did I give matanas to the kohen first? Did I give those royal chayim bekepa? Did I drain the blood? Did I shecht it properly? Did I do any ksulim and shchita? Right? Just a balabatish or guess a percentage. What percentage of the simonim in the four halakim of Shulchan Aruch over 1,300 chapters connects even somewhat loosely sometimes to food? That's high. That's high. I mean, there's a lot of marital law, there's business law, you know, but I saw that it looked to me like 30 and 35%. That's a huge amount. And I also did an informal listing of the 613 mitzvahs in the Sefer HaKinuch, and I circled anyone that some are clearly food. Don't eat orla, that's food. Right? Don't eat kilayim, that's food. Right? Don't cook milk and meat together. That's food. So there, it's also a similar kind of percentage. So you can't overstress the importance of usually we refer to an observant person as someone who's a Shomer Shabbos, but also we often say someone who keeps kosher. Like in English, you'd say is that person kosher, a kosher consumer, and usually you say it that way. So because it's a benchmark. And the benchmark of how we keep kosher and how careful we are is that you can't really be a shomer of anything if you're not knowledgeable. Rav used to say this a lot. You know, shomer Shabbos has to know Hilchos Shabbos. Can't be an amoritz on these things. So we have to be very well versed into anything that comes up. And the Tzurvim Rabbanon series is very well organized for this. It's really well organized. It's possibly something you can just get in and read yourself through, take notes even. But I think together we'll do a good job of this. And my plan is to supplement it with other material as well. I'm not going to just be doing that. Okay, so not only in Gan Eden is the command, first command to man regarding food, but Cain and Abel decide, let's give some food back. Right? I work with animals, you work with the plants. Let's give some of that back. Right? The Kli Yakar says something really beautiful in last week's parasha. He says, look at the order of creation. First, God creates space, which is like air. Then he creates water. Then he creates vegetation. Then fruits. Then he creates the sun and the moon. Okay, I would put that's also has to do with food because the sun helps us process necessary minerals, especially vitamin D, to make the food work in your body, right? And then look what's created on day five. Fish, fowl, meat. Get it? Water, vegetables, fruit, fish, fowl, meat. Ostensibly, the last thing you should want to eat is a person, because that's created last. Right? Okay. I asked you to remind you last year when we did Minchas Chinuch, we did mitzvah number 3, Gila Noshe. The Minchas Chinuch said if a person, Chas V'Shalom, is reduced to eating another human being to stay alive, should he get rid of the Gila Noshe or not? Okay, so this is the reason why you see very early on in the Torah you have all this emphasis placed on how important the connection between the arming the human being to do the best battle we can with our food battles. Until recently, most people had to spend every day were hunter and gatherer. You spent your day getting your food for that day and possibly for the next day. Right? Recently, there had been some drawings found on caves in Mesopotamia where they have pictures of, I think I've told you this before, pictures of large animals being hanging from their two legs. And the people are slowly lopping off pieces from them to keep it fresh because, in the summertime, you kill a big animal. How much time do you eat it? Could you have to eat it before you realize that you're getting sick from it? It doesn't even smell good anymore. But if you lop off pieces of the animal and then you stanch the bleeding and it's going to suffer terribly for 2 weeks until you finally, you know, cut out its heart or something, or cut chop off its head. So Torah is telling us there's something called Eiver Minachai. Because if you can be that cruel to an animal, you might end up being that cruel to a person. It's contrapositive is not necessarily true, which means that if you're kind to an animal, it does not mean that you will be kind to a person. But if you can be this cruel to an animal, it's likely that you will one day possibly be so cruel to a human being. And that's why Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach becomes one of these cardinal principles that Chazal tell us that Hashem already told Noach. Okay, so along these lines, we do see that the Tanakh does use food as euphemisms, a lot of euphemisms in Tanakh for food, especially you see in Mishlei, but even in Torah, Rashi's the one who always allows it to be when we're told that Yosef was in charge of everything in Potiphar's house except the bread that he eats. Which Rashi says is a euphemism for Potiphar's wife. And when Yisro tells his daughters, "Why did you leave that man out there? Well, to get the water, bring him in." Karen lo biyochalecha. Right, so he means maybe Shema Yisar chas miken. Maybe he'll marry one of you. So bread has always been a euphemism, sometimes for money, because bread, you know, money is it's Mishnah Nedarim. What's money for but food? Right? If anything else. In other words, taking a neder on money and taking a neder on food is considered the same thing. All right, this is perhaps enough of an introduction. We are not the only people with a dietary code. It's Mashma, this is Ibn Ezra's paper. She says that bread in both those psukim are actual bread. He says, he points out what we know now, archaeologically, is that the Egyptians had a very, very strict dietary code at the time of Yosef. Archaeology shows that they were Semitic in the Egyptian kings at the time. Yeah. And that they didn't eat meat. So that explains why it says when the brothers lined up to eat, it says the Egyptians would not eat near the Hebrews because it was a toeva to eat together with the Hebrews. The same way it might be a toeva for me to eat next to someone who's having ham and cheese and lobster. Right? Okay, so what is different about our law code is that it's because we know we're different. The Torah is all-knowing. Right? Those were law codes because of maybe scientific reasons or whatever it may be. Right? Kosher does not necessarily mean healthy, but from what I just said before about the Kliya Kar, about the order of creation, its point is whatever is better for us. There's plenty of kosher foods. Ribbonus could be kosher. It's not a very healthy thing. And there are plenty of unkosher foods that may be healthy, but the Torah is our benchmark, of course. And I'm going to give you now a way to, if you weren't aware of this before, now you'll be aware of it, that you can constantly be in fulfillment of four mitzvahs of the Torah. Four mitzvahs. You know there's a mitzvah to keep kosher, right? But did you know that there's also a mitzvah asei deoraisa, to know what makes a kosher animal? Just knowing that, you are in fulfillment, at least point to the Rambam and the Sefer HaKen. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to know that chewing the cud and split hooves makes a kosher animal. Two, to know.
What's the verse for that?
It's like a bazet tochelu, and it's a repetition as if those tell you that you need to know this in order to eat. That being the shomer before, you said before. So, and the fish, there's fins and scales. The birds is a little more complicated, because birds simonim are not given in the Torah. It is, the Torah just lists 24 unkosher birds, because the majority of the birds in the world are kosher. So it just tells you the ones that aren't. Now, whatever is not in this list is kosher. But you have to have a mesorah what's considered this list and what's not. The vast majority of the beasts and animals of the world are unkosher. So the Torah just tells us the 10 kosher animals and beasts, 3 kosher animals, 7 kosher beasts, and everything else is unkosher. Okay. So it's a mitzvah to know The birds, the Gemara just tells you what these 24 have in common. There are four signs that they have in common, and they tend to be birds of prey, which is what makes them kosher. And finally, the kosher locusts. Knowing the, just knowing the simonim is a fulfillment of Torah laws to help us eat kosher. Even if, in other words, even if you say, I don't eat meat, I can't process meat, and I never eat meat, but it's still a mitzvah to say, to know what makes kosher meat.
Right. Maybe actually conscious of knowing. Like, you're just sitting
here. Now you have it. Now you know it. You know, you always knew it. So that's a little longer than Minchas Chinuch deals with. We'll get up to when we do that. So these are the essentials. Then the Gemara does tell us that it can't just be that God said, let me come up with some arbitrary ways for them to know which animals are kosher and which animals are not. No, the animals that chew its cud, it's people. Why does it have to chew its cud? Because its main diet is one of the hardest things on planet Earth to digest, which is grass. Right? So it should be very easy. And even our bodies are much more dainty than a cow's stomach. And this stomach can digest meat, can digest the beef. So surely, their stomachs, they have four stomachs to get to all that cellulose and get it digested again. So any animal that's doing that is a chilled animal. It's not, because we are what we eat. And I know we're not supposed to do mitzvahs with this in mind, but it's obvious, especially when you look to what the Gemara says about the 24 birds of prey. Right. And the grasshoppers that are kosher are the ones that have a high wings and a head that turns up. We're not really such fakirim today in knowing the difference, but it's called the silam, samach lamed ayin mem. And if you have my Bereishis book for Vayetze, where I analyze the word sulam, I show that every Hebrew word after samach lamed, which is a basket that you wear and keep on your head, is something high up. Sulam, Sela is a high note. Sololos are ramparts. Slach is no say of own, lift up my sin, my guilt. So whatever goes there after that. Salad, so everything is high salutation. So Silam is guess what? A locust as it has its head shaped up, right? And its wings. So, all right, but... So the fish, fins and scales, this I haven't seen anywhere, but I think I'm just making this up, is that fish that have no covering on their bodies, like a dolphin, a whale, a shark, are not kosher, right? Because they're no covering. But the mice are exact opposite. It's the fish that have a shell on it, right? Like a lobster has a shell, a turtle has a shell, so shrimp. When it has too much of a covering, it's also not kosher. In other words, it's sort of like the rubs, synthesis, if you will, and engaging. It's like being like Abraham, not like Noah. And being like that, the Torah is telling us that to just disappear into your shell like a Noah is also not kosher. But being open for everything that's out there and saying, yeah, I'm a receptacle for whale. Go ahead, hit me, whatever it is. I can handle it. It's also not kosher. Okay. All right. So I would say this is maybe this is enough of an introduction for. Okay, so we can now go into the text. And so we are in book number six. I think that Mizrahi was supposed to have made, it's nice to have Amy Fechter Mizrahi here because this is a Mizrahi program. Okay. So the thesis of starting with this, page 23 in this, is what the Rambam writes. And, it's amazing. He writes it in Hilchos Rotzeach. He says, Harbei dvarim osru chachamim mipnei sheyesh bem sakanas nefashos. Rabbis prohibit anything that's dangerous. Are we allowed to go skiing? Right? There's risk in everything we do. Am I allowed to go into the subway? I mean, you know, we know you're not supposed to do dangerous things. Is my very from Hasidic uncle violating the halacha by not having good brakes on his station wagon? Right? What I'm saying is, so I'm going to leave aside all those things. We're concentrating here on food. Food goes into your mouth. You are what you eat. And I'm just reminded of a Tosfos that runs its way all over Shas. It's like 10 Tosfos in like this. If someone comes up to a michshol, he makes a mistake and he says something is mutu when it was usur, or he says this person is a kohen when it turns out he was an eved because he was collecting truma at the goren, and the Gemara asks, how could that happen? Pinchas Ben Yair's donkey didn't even come to a michshol, wouldn't eat the untied grain. So how could a michshol come to a tzaddik? So the Gemara says, no, our experience is that michshol does come to a tzaddik, but not with regards to food. It's fascinating. It's always Tosfos, always ends up with that. It says, a michshol can even come to a tzaddik on Shabbos. Famous stuff you give on the Sefer Shabbos, where Rabbi Shmuel flouted the gzera of not reading by the light of a flickering candle. He goes, don't worry, the candle's up all the way up there and I'm sitting down here and I'm not going to... And he got so involved in his learning that he got up and he moved the candle and extinguished on Shabbos. He said, oh, I'm going to set aside a chatas shmeina, famous story, to bring to the Beis HaMikdash when it's rebuilt. So we see that a mechshol can come to a great rav on Shabbos. But now when it comes to food, there's something about food, right? It's in a fascinating tshuva of the Radbaz, for instance, about a person who's deathly ill. And the question is, I can shech the chicken for him on Shabbos, or I can serve him a ready-made McDonald's hamburger. What do you do? Crazy? Check the chicken. Because Shabbos is given to be violated because he's going to die. Now, it may be that checking the chicken will take too long, but still, because the sick person doesn't want to know I got better because by eating I guess it might depend on who the person is, but he says, don't put tarfus into this person. Now look, the Gemara Cholin says on Yom Kippur, if only food available is swine, eat it. He has to save your life. That thing stands in the way of, in this order, in this kind of violations in front of Pikuach Nefesh. And yet you have these various tshuvas that say, but stay away from the food. Stay away from anything like going into your body. And you know what? What would disgust you more? Accidentally eating a pretzel on Chol Hamoed Pesach, or accidentally eating a bacon cheese and an egg sandwich? Pesach is kares, for goodness sakes. And this is a nisr lav. It's the same as speaking Lashon Hara, right? It's the same as wearing shatnez. And yet, right? Because one has something that's quite it's not a disgusting thing to eat a pretzel on Pesach, right? It's not going to disgust you. You're going to be very upset about it as if you ate on Yom Kippur, but right? Okay, so this is the Indian of that which goes into the body, that becomes part of you, like Moshe, who wouldn't nurse from the Egyptian women, right? Well, otherwise, why did the sisters say, shall I get a nurse for you? What made her have the chutzpah to say that? Because she saw that the boy wouldn't nurse from any of Paro's maidens there. That's not just a measure, she's just saying. Rashi brings it down.
Isn't there a danger that you're turning the mistress into some sort of practical?
Yeah. It's just that people just feel that there is such a it's a feeling, maybe, right? What disgusts you more? You know, accidentally writing on Shabbos, or I'm saying by mistake writing on Shabbos, or by mistake.
I couldn't tell whether they actually smell bad or just because it's crap. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. So you reach a certain madrega where you just, it's the kashrus is. Because, and it's, you see, Shabbos also, this activity is mutter 6 days a week. So there's no toiva in writing on, and it happens to be Saturday afternoon instead of Sunday afternoon. Right? 1 minute before, this is a prohibited act. 1 minute later, after Avdolah, now it's a permitted act. No, there's no toiva aspect to it. But there is a toiva in our minds, even though this, what I'm about to describe, is even only an issur drabanan of taking a spoon of ice cream right after you had some meat, right? So this is the toeva. It's just that no, my body can't do it. It's like the Rav used to say. It's just that it's a great madrega to be. It's true yiras Hashem. It's not for fear of what may. I just have fear that I violation, right? Okay, so when something is usually permitted to us, and then it becomes prohibited, it's going to become very prohibited. Right? And two food examples are whatever is prohibited to a nazir, right? Because this thing is usually permitted to him, so it becomes prohibited. The Torah makes a lot of safeguards around nazir. And chametz on Pesach. You make a tremendous amount of and the stam of Hilchos Nida also runs into the same kind of chumra type of thing, because it's now prohibited, and the same thing is permitted to, you know, a short time later. So the Rambam is saying here that there could be something to kashrus, and I fully expect it. I expect that keeping kosher keeps me spiritually healthy, and for that matter, physically healthy. I expect it. The physical health is part of my spiritual health, because I can't have one without the other. Tikkun HaGuf Kodem Tikkun HaNefesh. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to have spiritual health, I'm sure he also wants me to have physical health. Right? I looked in Chazal. It's not a Maamar Chazal. Tikkun HaGuf Kodem Tikkun HaNefesh, I think, appears first in the Kuzari. I think. I could be wrong about that. But it's not a Chazal. Meaning it's not a Gemara or a Medrash. You've heard this, right?
Yeah.
You have to fulfill the needs of the guf before you fulfill. Right? But Sir Salanta said something beautiful, is that the human being has all kinds of material needs and spiritual needs. We need to feel fulfilled. We need to feel like I'm accomplished and I have meaning in my life. We also have material needs. I need to eat. Good. Don't eat till tomorrow morning and see if you can go to a shir. Right? So we have to Keep in mind that we have both these kind of needs. The Torah, the halacha, tells us on a daily basis, of course, if you're well enough to do this, is take care of your material, your physical, sorry, your spiritual needs before your material needs. In other words, daven before eating. Right? You should daven before eating. Davening is a spiritual need, and eating is a material need. It's great to get up to the madrega where you can consider eating a spiritual need too, right? But Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said something really extraordinarily beautiful. I cite it all the time. I know. I remember seeing your face light up when I've said it the last time. Is that everybody else's material needs, right? To support everybody else but your own, to even your children, your own spouse, to satisfy the spiritual needs of others is a fulfillment of a material To satisfy the material needs of others is a spiritual need of ours.
Okay.
Right? And again, if I help you with your material need, I am fulfilling a spiritual need of mine.
Okay, but the basis of kashrus, I mean, starting up with the Gan Eden, but you cannot eat from it, is it just going back? It's just training yourself to...
I'm arguing for all of it. If they had not eaten from the tree,
If what?
Ramban says, people misunderstand this Ramban.
It's not that tree, it doesn't matter which tree. It's just that they didn't keep
if they had kept the mitzvah, they would have lived forever. Ketzad, how is that? Is that the body and the soul were so engulfed and wrapped one with the other. Soul is everlasting, right?
No.
The body is not.
No.
So if they had not sinned, their primal state after creation was where the body and the soul are so one, they couldn't, what could they recognize that they're naked? Is the soul naked? They didn't recognize any of that because it was such a perfection. But once sin comes in, then there's a disconnect between the body and the soul. And the body is good. It doesn't have the protection of you being united with the soul and will decay and it'll die. Right? There are different opinions of what God meant when he said, "Biyom ha-chacham," he meant it most to us. As soon as you eat from it, you'll die. Not as soon as, but as soon as you eat from it, you'll be susceptible to die.
It's like saving
the consequence. Right, right. It's a consequence of eating this.
It's really hard to understand it. Outstanding now,
right? And yet, here we are. We humans, so imperfect, but a piece of work is man. Right. So. Therefore, I use this Rambam as for a source on page 23, and he says, "Chola over aleihem, v'omer harini misakein ba'atzmi." And someone who says, "No, I can eat this thing." Now, on this particular thing, there are some things that are healthy for me that are not healthy for you, and vice versa, right? Depends on your intolerance, or it depends on, right? So everybody has to know. You have to go to a doctor, and you have to be careful. You have to see what the allergies you might have. Some people get deathly sick from eating a peanut. So we have to know what's misukan, right? I know. My daughter uses that word very much with the kids. Oh, something's misukan, right? I have to tell you, in their neighborhood, the behavior, the kids running around crazy, wild, right in front of the buses and the bikes up and down the hills, and the crazy stuff there. Those from kids, and it's just amazing. HaKadosh Baruch was watching over. The buses come screaming around the corners, and so it's misukan. But we're limited to the misukanness of food. And he says, "Mala achirim alai b'kach, o eini makpil alkach." He says, "What do you have to worry? This is not b'kach. Makino samakas mardus." Now, makino samakas mardus is Rambamese for "you violated a rabbinic ordinance, and we're going to punish you for it." And because it was a Torah ordinance, it would be malchus, it would be in the Beis Din. Marcus Marcus is just like, it's a way of rabbinic lashes. You see, they wouldn't have the rabbinic there. Right. So the question is, you probably, whatever is in the next 40 pages, you probably all know. The main one, the one that takes up the most space in the Shulchan Aruch, is fish and meat. You're familiar with it, right?
You mean fish and meat together?
Eating fish and meat together.
Really?
Right? So here on page 24 is the original source of why fish and meat is not to be consumed. And you'll see it's not so simple. Okay? Source number 2 on page 24, it's Marim Pesachim, the fine book. It says, "Ahi beinisa de itva bahadi bisra." It was a certain type of fish that was roasted together with meat. Means right together, one on top of the other, belios one into the other at the same time. Or possibly cooked, or filter fish was cooked together with, not chicken, because chicken is not meat, midoraisa. It was cooked with beef, with goat meat, or lamb, right there in the same pot. Okay? So, asra rava miparzikya lemichle bekutcha. Hello? I mean, this even Sfardim will agree with this. What did he say you shouldn't do with this fish? The meat, of course not. Meat you can't have with. Kutcha is yogurt. Right? Kutcha is a dairy dish. Right? So he says, do you see what the original statement is? Fish and meat cooked together in the same pot,
yeah,
you can't eat that fish with dairy.
Can't eat the fish with dairy. Can't eat it at all.
So, but if this rabbi says you can't eat that fish with dairy because it was cooked in a pot together with meat, yeah. I mean, Ashkenazim to go one better than this. If you cook gefilte fish in a fleshed pot without the meat in it, you're not supposed to eat that with dairy, right? Sfaradim allow it, but Ashkenazim not. That's Machlokes HaShulchan Aruch and the Ramah. So, but the implication of this original, this first opinion is that you can't eat it with yogurt, but you can eat it by itself. Right? Even though it was cooked in a pot. And so now when you cook two things together, what goes from one of the food to the other? What do you call that? Ta'am. That's why we have separate pots.
Because
Ta'am. But not mamashus. If I cook a corned beef here and I cook a filtered fish here in the same pot, mamash, same water, and I see that the fish didn't dissolve in the water, it's a piece of fish. But what came in from one to the other is ta'am. Taste the water and you'll see that there's ta'am in the water, right? So apparently this first opinion just says that the time of the meat goes into the fish, and for that reason, you can't eat that fish with dairy, but the implication is that you can eat it by itself. That the time of the meat is not enough to prohibit the fish. I mean, there's not what I just described after that is not so far from that. Do you ever cook gefilte fish in a fleshy pot?
No.
You have special fish pots? You too?
I don't cook it.
I find out. No, but you're even Ashkenazim. Sfaradim are more lenient on this thing.
I have a special.
Special pot for fish?
Yeah.
No, I understand why. Because you may not want to be fleshiks from that fish. If you're Ashkenazi and you cooked fish in a fleshik pot, then it does make you fleshik. It just you can't have fleshik with it.
But you can eat the fish.
Yeah. You cooked it in a fleshic pot that wasn't used.
And, okay, so meat and fish, the prohibition is not because of health, it's because of kashrut.
Let's see. Let's finish this tomorrow. This opinion. This is the first opinion. There's a second opinion coming up.
The dairy is also
a fish. That's a tour. There's a second opinion coming up now. All right? Okay. Mar Baravashi. This is the guy. It's all because of Mar Baravashi. Amar, afilu b'milcha nami asura. Milcha, he's just being exaggerative. It means you can't even eat this fish at all. You can't even eat it with salt. Forget about it with dairy. The meat, the fish has been rendered prohibited when you cook it this way. And the meat too. Right? Yishum dekashe l'recha u'ledavar acher. Wow, it causes a bad odor. And something else. Whenever the Mishnah says something else, it means skin disorders. Right? So you're not supposed to have fish cooked with... Now, kal vachomer, you shouldn't eat them together. Same dish. Sometimes you're at a wedding and you think you're getting breaded chicken, but it's actually fish. You be careful. So at weddings, they tend to keep the fish all in one area. Sushi, maybe, and then they have the carving station.
Eat the fish first and the meat after.
Yes, some people say that only do the fish because fish doesn't get between the teeth like meat does. So you have the meat first, yeah. Now you're having fish, and there's meat between your teeth. The Rambam's reason for separating milk and meat. But if you have the fish first, fish doesn't get stuck between your teeth.
Why the separation?
No. So here it says, Davar Acher. What the danger is involved. You see this line in between. It says, according to the first opinion, the fish is only forbidden to be eaten with dairy due to the absorbed meat flavor. According to the second opinion, it's even forbidden to eat the fish alone because it was cooked together with the meat. Eating this is dangerous. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins. Fascinating thing. You see, we went straight to the Shulchan Aruch. This halacha does not make it into the Rambam. The Rambam just says in Hilchos Shmiras and Nefesh, which was the first source we did, that you're not supposed to do anything with that's dangerous. Okay. Food, not with anything. In my opinion, that includes not skiing. I don't know how people do that. People die skiing, so how can you go skiing? How can you go skiing? I'm being facetious. Maybe. But, okay. All right, so the Shulchan Aruch.
It's okay automatically because meat doesn't take anything from the fish, so they don't have to discuss the meat.
So, well, the reason why the, if you want to say that the fish got tam from the meat, but the meat got tam from the fish,
right? Can you eat the meat?
So the halacha is going to be no. No on both, because each one has tam of fish and meat together. Right? Meat with tam of fish with tam of meat.
Right?
Because the second opinion is only contrasting itself to the first opinion. Right? Because it says, don't eat that fish with milk. It didn't have to mention the meat. Of course you can't eat the meat with milk. It's meat. But here, with the chiddush of this gemara is that not only is meat forbidden with milk, even the ta'am of meat is forbidden with milk.
Okay.
Which is why we have separate.
What happens if we cook the fish in a clean fresh pot?
So Ashkenazim should not eat that fish with a milchik dip or something. But it doesn't make you flacious. It doesn't make you flacious. Yeah, you can certainly eat it. Yeah. A lot of people eat cook it that way. They use a flesh of plants. You can make it in a milk pot too. Just have to then that you can't eat together with meat.
It sounds like not the cooking thing. You know, challah that is on the table with flesh and not shouldn't be eaten.
And challah is a totally different.
Because you forget.
Yeah, because meat can't be milk of flesh. Meat that's milk of flesh is treif. You will not find at least a reputable good hashgacha on milchik bread.
I'm not saying
even because the hergel davar, because you eat meat bread with so many different things, so just keep it fleishik. Once it's on the fleishik table, just leave it fleishik. Right? At least every month or so, we have all the left. If we take even small kazayas of leftover challah, once it wasn't touched, but we make breadcrumbs out of it. Once a month, make a whole big pile of breadcrumbs. But that was challah on a fleishik table. So you have to be careful how you use it. You can have it with parv. It doesn't make you fleishiks. You shouldn't have those breadcrumbs mamish straight with a cheese sandwich and put it in a salad. We have cheese also. Okay.
Is the second opinion just based on his empirical experience?
It's amazing. Yeah, Mara Barvashi. That's an Amora. It's a late Amora. What the last generation of Amorai? Where was this halacha for 200-300 years? Right? Why isn't it a Tana, an early Tana telling you this if it's such a sakana?
Why are professors bound by maybe mistaken
observations? So the Shulchan Aruch paskins, Tzorach lizor shelo lechol basar v'dog biyachad b'tnei shekosha l'tzaras. He tells us what the davar acher is. Okay. So the question is going to be here now is what about b'di'evet? Okay, so I know I'm not supposed to do this lechatchila, but b'di'evet, I had fish and meat roasting in the same not mamish, not with water with it, because that's really mixing roasting one next to the other. So there are mapaskins at the middle floor, but chayin ein mitzlos basar in dog. Mishum recha, mihu b'di'eved, eino osur. B'di'eved, it's not forbidden. Right? So here's the question. There is a Gemara, listen to these words, chamira sakanta me'isura. Chamira sakanta me'isura, which in Aramaic means we treat things that are prohibited because of sakana with more stringency. And we treat things that are prohibited because of they're in the Torah. So an example the Gemara gives is that it's iser, it's osir to eat bread before washing, right?
Bread what?
Before washing.
Yeah.
It's sakana to bench without washing. because of the salt that they used to.
Salt.
Oh, but in Washington.
Before
calls it, Sakon. So now you see why it's a chasidishmini, because Tosfos writes, where this appears in the Gemara, Tosfos says, today in Germany we don't have that kind of salt. We eat with utensils, we eat with forks, you know, we don't eat with our fingers. So we don't have to worry about Maya Machronim anymore. So the Yekis don't put the Chassidim say, no, the Gemara says Maya Machronim Chova. Maya Mishonim Mitzvah, Maya Machronim Chova. Chova is bigger than the Mitzvah. So there it was also because of Sakana, and now we're not so much on it. So the question is going to be with regards to fish and meat, is it's very clear from what I've been saying over the last 15 minutes that we're more lenient with fish and meat. First of all, the diabet, we say it's okay. You wouldn't eat cheese and roasted together, right? One right next to the other, splattering one right next to the other like this, you wouldn't touch it, right? But with fish and meat, we say, all right, but b'di'evet, it's all right, we did it already, okay, it's not, don't waste it. Okay. But what do you do after, so if you're aware of Chassidish Minhagim, right, you have the fish and then you have a schnapps before you have the meat? Is that right? Something. Don't go straight to the meat. At the wedding too.
Of course not.
At the wedding too. They're serving a lot of fish all around. They're serving a lot of meat all around. Right? So don't put, you know, if you're going to have, certainly you have to have a separate plate. Don't put sushi and the duck together and the duck l'orange together in the same plate. Right? So preferably the fish first, and then you have the right. So I heard a story that, you know, when Yonah was caught inside a fish, so he prayed and the fish had to throw him up. So if we eat fish and the fish prays to get to, you know, that it should be to leave us because it didn't want to be eaten, right? So we drown it in the schnapps, so it's not bread. You're not allowed to pray if you drink. So the fish will stay inside. Right? But no, the schnapps is actually to separate between the fish and the meat.
Because it's logic, since we don't experience wrath, maybe it was a fish that in that year, you know,
could be. Now you see, they say Taras. I mean, Shulchan Aruch said Taras. He said Davar Acher, which is usually Taras. Rashi says Taras. But now they usually say some kind of skin disorder, get a rash.
Yeah, but
I mean, maybe. It's a big Chuvah Sarashva. It's like 10 pages where he discusses, he calls together all the Gemaras and Shas that tell you various medical procedures to do, which, you know, where eat this will happen, don't eat that, this one, you know, and discusses which ones are the doctors today agree with, and now we're 800 years after that, and we can discuss, you know, which ones are, you know, we had just said yesterday in the daf about the advice of the Gemara is to stay far away from whole wheat bread. We don't want that whole wheat bread. It's bad for you. It's marbe zevel. It makes you go to the bathroom a lot. And now we know that the whole wheat bread is the best thing for you. All the paskibor and all the wheat germ and all. Because I understand it. At that time, they had one bathroom for the whole town. You know, your bathroom might be 2 miles from where you live, and you have to wake up in the morning, and you have to worry every single morning, where am I going to, you know, clear out yesterday's ashes? So when you didn't want to eat things that was mar bezevel, you know what I'm saying? So things change in that realm, and yet all this time, with all the scientific data we know about, regarding these things that are healthy for you, the fish and the meat has stayed very firm. So while we're at it, I'm just going to mention three others that are very, very makbid, and the Grah was mamish makbid even b'di'evet on the fourth. The three are do not, I should say they're more than three, let's not say the second. The three are do not ever leave uncovered, even in a refrigerator, a peeled onion, a peeled garlic, and a peeled egg. Do not leave it uncovered. The way most poskim explain it is that tiny little flies get in, inside them, and they embed inside them.
There's nothing to do with eating an onion. The
but they say because of sakana.
But also, like, if you mix them together, then you can move them.
No, if you put oil or
salt. Yeah, mixed other things in it, yes, that'll kill them, whatever is there. And it's no longer recognizable as that thing. And of course, milk, wine, and water. But that no one holds from anymore.
Wine and what?
Milk, grape juice of wine, and water. Left in a cup,
yeah,
overnight, open, without a cover on it.
You can't use that?
Today we do. Today we can. But in the time of the Gemara, it was very prohibitive. What could happen? What's the famous thing that could happen to
a snake.
We're worried about snakes leaving poison in these things. So obviously, you know, how was the last time a snake entered your house? Was in your house? Today, after my war, if there are flies getting in or bugs or something, you have to be careful. Once we had this infestation of ladybugs. So 20 ladybugs made their way into our kitchen. They were funny, they were cute, but it was they could get into your drink also. Anyway, so some of these things we'll see are and something. Everything we've done today is an Indian in Sakana, right? The last one, the Vilna Gaon, was very makbid about, and you have to be very careful with baby carriages. Is you never put food under a place where someone is sleeping. No food under a place where you're sleeping.
Under somebody's sleeping.
And preferably not even the bed when someone's not sleeping there. In other words, you keep it there when they're not sleeping, because then you'll leave it there when they're sleeping. Main thing is not when they're sleeping. It's just that when someone's sleeping, there's a malach habavos above them because it's 1/60th of death, and the food goes in your body. It's Vilna Gaon. He's not a superstitious person. He's very makbid not to have food under a place for some sort of kids, babies sleep in a carriage. Be careful. You go shopping and you put food under the baby carriage. Mm-hmm. So maybe now, I think what they acknowledge is that there's a space, there's a certain amount of space similar to the tumah in a casket. So I'm not going to make zeros that are too difficult for the tzibur to keep, but these are more examples of things that we avoid not because of Isser, but because of Sakana.
Didn't you have the refrigeration a huge engine?
Yeah, some. But then still, I know it was very mocking when I was a camp rabbi, is that if you're going to have those peeled onions, these big Spanish onions, you cover them in something, cover them in aluminum foil or something. Don't leave them in a big pot uncovered.
Covered. No, I understand that you leave it out, I understand the concern, but it's
even
in
the refrigerator. Yeah.
A cup of wine, you don't put in the refrigerator uncovered?
No, now we can. This cup of wine was the snake's problem. We don't have that anymore.
So. For what reason is the other one still like that?
That could be mamash iser. That could be iser because not just the ruach ra, but the little tsetse flies. Little flies get in there. You can see them there. They roam around, 20 of them. You can see at the top of an onion, and you sweat it. I mean, you see they're all.
Especially in the summer.
Yeah, and they embed inside them, and they eat away at it, you know, as much as until they kill themselves and eat too much. But they die a glorious death in stomach. We stay away from it. Some of them are even too small to perceive sometimes. But if you swat at them, you'll see there's this perceivable. I'll admit that some of the things we'll see over time, like bishulakum or shemen or you know, Stam Yenam or Chalav Yisrael and Pas Yisrael, things that are because of separations, those were never kashrus concerns. Right? It was hachaka. But one of them was always a kashrus concern. It was Chalav. Chalav Yisrael. It's a famous tshuva of Moshe Feinstein on this. Is that the, you see it always very, very popular in Eastern Europe to mix kosher and non-kosher milk. Certain percentages that are not bothered by shisha. Yes, so in the United States, with Moshe Paskin, that especially if there's an OU on it, an OU means that even if the OU just applies the same kosher standards as at the Stella Dora cookies as Stella would know. So that means it's Chol Yisrael, because the problem is not, it's not harchak. We don't socialize over milk. The problem is kashrus. So if you're sure that this is an OU product, it means it's kosher, so it automatically becomes Chol Yisrael. If the problem is kashrus, and that's a separate issue. If the problem is a ruach ra'ah, or the problem is some kind of other harchaka, something to stay away because of chasnus, socializing, and things like that, right? Yeah, how Yayin Nesach helps that, and we're all over the world now, but how Yayin Nesach, Yayin Mavushal helps that is a pella, is a bit of a pella. Tosfos asks about this, for the reason why cooking wine protects it from the Gentiles' touch, so to say, even in the finest restaurants, is because the original Isser was libations. Yayin Nesach. Nesach was poured before an Avodah Zarah. The Romans used to pour up a little bit for their local god and then drink. Right. So that becomes Tikrovus Avodah Zarah. Very awesome. So no one's really making libations like that anymore. But if you cook wine, it's no longer ro'i l'mizbeach. Cooked wine is not offered as libation. Same reason why cooked blood is not asur midaraisa, because it's no longer ro'i l'mizbeach. But blood is born asur, right? Cooking the wine after the guy touches it doesn't help. Following what I'm saying? So cooking the blood doesn't help. It's still asur. But anyway, so it stands to reason that if today socializing is the issue, what difference does it make if it's cooked wine or not? If some cooked wines are very, very fine wines, and we could socialize with them. And furthermore, what about whiskey?
More likely to
drink a schnapp, a shot with someone and socialize. And yet Tosfos asks these questions and says, well, what we have is the original Zera. And now if the Gzera has been extended to Chasnus, it's only according to the rules of Yayin Nesach, which is limited to wine and limited to uncooked wine. But Tosfos does say, in their places, we should not have even cooked wine. I shrei chai v'kayim, but I'm not saying this is kept totally in breach, but I know it's not kept fully. Is that a Jew should never go into a bar and order cooked wine. Totally forbidden. Jew should never go into a bar, I would say. But if you're going to go into a bar, you get a kosher beer or something, or a shot of whiskey or something. But not wine. Not cooked wine.
Because
cooked wine in their place, it's their place. What could be more usher? Mishum chasnas. I just want to turn this on its head because you cooked it. Now you're going to undo the whole thing. It's not also because of libations. No one's pouring off a piece of... It's also because of chasnus, socializing.
Socializing with
the schnapps. Yeah, I know, Satoshi says. But that is it's only something that could be used as a libation. And even though you can make a good party with beer and, you know, good socializing with beer and, you know, but nonetheless, that's Tosfos' response.
Is there anything that means, it's occurred to me, cook the wine other than us for this
food? Yeah, if they want to have Jews come in, you know, they've seen the Jews come in.
Sorry,
Right? Okay. All right. So that covers for today. I'm just going to review some of the other side questions. Is chicken also forbidden with fish? What's the chatchila? And if the Gemara says Chamira Sakanta Mei Sura, why am I allowed to cook fish in a fleshik pot, but I can't cook dairy in a fleshik pot, even if it's past Ben Yomo?
Which is
pot. It's because I know, but if it's also Mishum Sakana, I have to treat it more stringently. So there are some poskim who say, yeah, you shouldn't cook fish in a fleshik pot. But we don't pass on it. One thing you should avoid doing is cooking fish in a fleshik pot that cooked fleshik within 24 hours.
Uh-huh.
Wait till it's not a ben yomo. There is such a standard.
Are you going to come up with fish in milk?
The Torah says not to have fish in milk. It's not a common mitzvah at all.
Do any of the
Onim
refer to this prohibition? Fish and meat. Like, it seems like this went
Amora. Yeah, it's Amora, and it's brought down the first time in the Shulchan Aruch.
Right, so what happened between them?
It's fascinating. What I'm going to do is I have a review of all of the Sakana in Yanim. I went over all them today, but it's a nice review of everything. So I'll make that available next week, so you can have it.
So if the
talk
is wrong, it's not really an issue because it's not kosher, so it should be able to owe you.
And yet, it's still Rav Moshe at the end of that tshuva says we should keep it up. Okay. He implies because it supports these companies also.
It's the only way that you'd explain it as a Hebrew mitzvah.
Yeah, because a Jew was stood there while, you know, to some extent, while the process was going on. Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah.
I had a friend who
I have the four pages of the review of what we just did, but it's in those books. Page 49, 48-51. You just 48-51.
So why?
Thank you, everybody, for coming.